from the Israel Center here. Actually, going to finish here 9 a.m. from 309. Continuing this morning, hearing on St. Bill 185, St. Bill 190, St. Bill 221.
It's not increasing, it's not increasing the workload of the PUC in this particular area. One of the main reasons that I don't think we should be into this sort of thing is that
it should not.
Yes, sir. Starting off with the cost sheet that we've handed out, that shows that our revenues from dedicated funds would be roughly $3,000, but the regulatory cost is substantially greater than that, so we run a deficit of $302,000. And that, I think, is unnecessary unless there's some compelling need for the regulation. Now, the ones that we do have under regulation now, there are quite a number that are theoretically under regulation, and they haven't been regulated for many, many years, except on a crisis basis. So that is, if some problem occurs, then regulation moves in. We offered a companion bill, I guess we call it, which is House Bill 2270, which would give recognition to what we are in fact doing by way of water regulation, which is on a complaint basis with the small companies. Now, if there are any questions based on a handout or what I just said, I'll be glad to answer them. If I do.
Any questions about that? Mr. 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 Mr.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Jack Cole. I'm the president of KJS Corporation, which is in the development business in Clackamas County. I want to speak in favor of the water district. Clackamas County, sir. Of the water district being under the jurisdiction of the Utilities Commission. And I'd like to read the following. As a result of development of Cascade Country and Cascade Country 2 in Clackamas County, KJS Corporation has the following suggestions to improve administration and service provided by local water districts. Before pointing out particular areas of concern, it is our general feeling that all water districts should be supervised by the State Utility Commissioner to eliminate the vast policy and operational differences between districts. Specific areas of interest include 1. Establishment of a regional planning concept to provide orderly development of new supplies of water to prevent critical water shortage problems. Examples of these shortages are now found in Damascus, Redland, and Claremont water districts. 2. Water districts should have uniform specifications for builders and developers to follow. With these specifications, the developers can accomplish proper planning, cost analysis, and construction. As it now stands, some water districts will not allow developers to subcontract water main installation. In Claremont Water District, the practice is for the water district to obtain an estimate of cost from their engineer, bid the job, and award the contract without the developer having the opportunity to analyze the charges. 3. In the above problem, it is further compounded by the water district to require the developer to deposit cash equal to the estimate of cost prior to the installation of the water system. This creates a difficult situation because the lending institutions are reluctant to release development funds when the mortgagors have no control of the contractor. KJS Corporation has on several occasions experienced costly delays while obtaining additional interim financing to satisfy water district demand. 4. We feel that system demand charges might be justifiable, but we do not think that water districts should require the funds to be deposited until the actual demand is requested. Thus, instead of paying water hookup charges prior to development, a more equitable method would be for these funds to be paid when a new home is supplied with water. In some cases, water districts have the use of a developer's funds without interest for a year or longer. 5. Changing patterns of development have created dedicated but undeveloped roads in some areas. Planners admit that these right-of-ways will not be useful in the future but it has been the practice of some water districts to require funds to be deposited in quotes just in case. Thus, if a development borders one of these old wagon roads, the developer is faced with depositing funds that will cover the development of water mains on that road, but in reality the funds are never used for the purpose intended and are diverted. This practice could be eliminated by realistic coordination between city and county planners and the local water districts. This and other much needed coordination would be accomplished if the water districts were under the supervision of the State Utility Commissioner. KJS Corporation urges passage of legislation that will place local water districts under the control of the Utility Commissioner. Sincerely.
Any questions?
Chairman of the McKay Water Control District.
You got your address and you want to use your name now?
It's Route 1, Box 181D, Hillsborough, Oregon. Our reason for favoring Senate Bill 190 is that we're concerned about development or other activity in the area that may hinder.
We had testimony from the water center last time, and I think everybody agrees with me.
Now, okay. I think it's a lack of coordination in that we do not know what they're doing. We have received our approval for land acquisition and funding on this project. We're concerned that development may take place that would hinder our pipelines, our other construction phases that could either prohibit or hinder or increase the cost of the project beyond what has been budgeted. The county has gone on with its plan of development without advising us of what they're doing. We have no way of knowing what they're doing, and we feel that this would give us an opportunity during our development stage to have the coordination that we need.
You're talking about housing coming in, that's right?
Say that again, sir.
You're talking about housing coming in?
No, we're concerned about anything that may cause our pipelines to be changed. We don't want to be in the planning business. We don't want to be in the zoning business. We just don't want things to develop during our construction period that would hinder the project.
Well, if they are going to develop, you want to know it.
We want to know it. That's right.
I'm looking at Senator Hart. Are you planning to get that Senator Hart on the line? Okay, let me just tell you what the
I think our appeal might be more effective if we're to the county commissioners themselves. I don't know what the situation is in most counties, but our coordination with the planning commission historically with our district has been very, very poor. We've seen building permits issued merely by driving through our district and seeing stakes out and getting a hold of the county to see what's going on. A recent case was a church that was being built on a site. I think if we... It's hard for me to answer that question. I assume that the purpose of the Planning Commission in the first place is to take some of the workload off the commissioners. But our thinking here is that we would see what's happening in these projects, then they would go to the Planning Commission, and then they would go to the commissioners if there were objections to these, to the project or to the development that's proposed. This way we would look at it, the planners would look at it, and if there was a dispute, then the county commissioners could be the mediating body, which they normally are in these circumstances anyway. But our problem is we don't know what the planners are doing, and things are happening before we know about it. And this could cause us great expense.
Well, would this let's suppose we put you into the veto, which is the effect of what they're asking for here. In other words, the irrigation district, as I understand it, you just say, well, no plastic of it, and that's what you're asking for here in 4 nights. So I think that the inclination of the group is generally this, that the tree is going to be satisfied on making the case that this ought to be done in your area. But if we grant that, then I think we're now trying to resolve what happens then. We give you a pretty heavy mallet to stop by just not approving the plat or plan or replat or deed. Where do we go there? And I have some motions. I would eventually like to see the Planning Commission, but I just am careful with all the county Planning Commission in my judgment and be stuff to do it. They don't know what's going on. This bill,
are the mediating body, that if it's really all we're doing is just getting one more step in the process to ensure that we know what's going on. We don't want to usurp the county's powers overall.
That's probably the need to see by just putting you in here. And then we're going to go. And then we've got to use the class that has to be committed. But they put their name in the middle. That's why it's so far, that's the thing that I think is how strongly do you feel about this thing that's going to use the fight and making any kind of
thing? It really needs subdivider or the developer. They've already ruled, let's say they say no development. There's going to be a
just a reservoir, I think. And then the developer says, no, I own the property and I don't want to buy it, I don't want to come in. Now, the question really is, you find the standard, is where does the developer go? Does he go directly to the county commission? Or does he, present law, so he go to the circuit court? And I would agree that that's not good enough, we want some other hurdles. But would he go to the planning commission? And then what happens if the planning commission reverses the water control district? And you have a problem there. Then what happens then?
And then we'll go on to, then I would suggest to that question, so we go to the governing body, if we do an amendment to talk about conservation, where it is. I would say with an amendment here, that Senator Harkin is putting that my preference to be for that section of the court for the planning commission.
You're saying have to go to the planning commission first and then to us?
No. You, the planning commission, the county commission.
I think that's basically what we're asking.
Yeah, I think, really, we're off onto another point. I think we've all said, all the other person has started drinking, but I'm confident that we agree.
Fortunately, in my mouth.
Yeah, right. that we want to put you in the planning process. And what the way you recommended to go in, I think we concur, give you a veto. So there isn't going to be any development initially in any area in your district without your approval. Period. Okay, now the question is, what if the developer or the landowner disagrees with your judgment? What happens to me then? Now that's what we're tackling now is I'm a developer and I own property in your district and you say don't build now or don't build at all. What's my recourse? Do I then, you've already made the decision, you have all your notice, you have your veto and the whole bit. What happens if I want to appeal? Do I go to the planning commission? And the question I ask is if the planning commission reverses it on a subdivision plat, does the county commission have a right to reverse the planning commission on a subdivision?
Is the county?
Mm-hmm. Cities, they're not. Planning commission is the end all on subdivisions.
Yeah.
It's true by state law, unless the planning commission has agreed to, by ordinance, to change it. That's a little old.
Well, it's a quote of Sandy Gugelmoria. As the Secretary of the Planning Commission may recommend the governing body of the county and city of Bruce McGee the doctrine supporting the regulation, that would be the doctrine of the subdivision. And the word is a recommendation, if this is a cross step.
Well, it's actually in the
1904, just here in French, which is up here, in the court of the Secretary of the Secretary of the Secretary of the
Secretary of the Secretary of the Secretary of the
I was not aware of that.
I don't know if it was in the bottom of the page. Three. Well, I think it's the
part, I think it's the problem. John, why
don't you come on after? Senator Burns and members of the committee, I think that I've written it down. Is that all right?
Okay.
My address is 12800 Southwest Canyon Road, Beaverton, 97005. All right. I think that Mr. Middleton has pretty succinctly stated the problem and what, at least the McKay District, is interested in, and that's primarily just one of notice so that they know beforehand what subdividers and builders are interested in before the construction starts and are able to have a hand in the planning of these things. And from the standpoint of an appeal, we're certainly in accord with the recommendations of Senator Hartung that this be removed from the circuit courts and be more a matter of administrative appeal, whether to the planning commission or the county commissioners. Now, it seems to me that the county commission really is the final arbiter in all of these things, at least in my experience in Washington County, that they do have the final word on subdivision plat approval, and to have an appeal from any action that the Water Control District Board may take go to the planning commission merely compounds the appellate process. In other words, it's still going to go to the county commissioners. The county commissioners are going to have to be the final arbiters of the thing, so why not have the appeal go directly to the Board of County Commissioners?
Well, John, this is a
how it ever got there. From a practical standpoint, whether it goes to the Planning Commission first and then goes to the County Commissioners is really pretty incidental. What we're primarily interested in is just having notice before these things start. I don't think that ORS 92.048 really is applicable in this situation because it refers back to 92046, which has to do with partitioning of land in other than subdivisions. And what we're talking about in 92110 is just subdivisions. Well, my recommendation would be that it go directly to the County Commission, because if otherwise you're just compounding the appellate process. They're the people who have the final say in these things anyway.
The only thing that I think bothers me, kind of burning about it, is that most of us have been trying long and hard to put some life and plans in and getting some teeth. I think he is worried that we may be doing right. My concern is that eventually we may want to have the appeal to the Planning Commission. And the Planning Commission, if they have the tools that support necessary, to be in the teeth and if they do right now, they're generally pretty interested. My concern is by shipping them to the Planning Commission.
Same section of ORF.
Yeah,
right.
What if we do with United?
Well, we that's no problem as far as we're concerned.
We're all trying to get the same thing, that's what we can sort of include that from our hearing, but I think there's no disagreement on what we want. It's a question of how we get there, because this is the main thing. So the irrigation district, water control district, drainage district, the district, including counties, all get a credit.
No, that's correct.
I think we found something for Dean to work on.
I think Dean found it. Just to conclude my remarks, I think you can see primarily what we're interested in is the notice situation, and whatever you work out as far as the appellate procedure is going to be perfectly all right with the McKay district, and I'm sure with the other districts.
You're getting under 190 a lot more than notice. Okay. In other words, you It gives you a lot more to know it.
Well, ultimately, it's going to be there anyway. In other words, even if we do veto it, they're going to have the right to override that. So I think that review and recommendation is really what we're after.
So we might like it, huh?
Probably so, at least for the developers.
Okay. We'll revert back to 221, for the benefit of Senator Cronin. I hope you can really enlighten Senator.
I'm flattered. Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the reason that we have had this bill drafted, we have a real problem in Clackamas County of one certain water district and that I know of and have had personal experience with a friend of mine who's here today to testify as a contractor there, a building contractor in the in Clackamas County, and has built a number of homes out in the Claremont Water District. On the superintendent of this particular, are you listening, Senator Carson? I'll proceed when you're through. What concerns us in this particular water district, we have seen where all supplies, a material, even labor, must be contracted through the water district. We find the contractor in this particular area are having to pay as much as $5 a yard for sand. This is the sand to cover the pipes after they've been laid. They can buy it for $1.80 a yard on the market, and placed in the trench. But they
back up and run by that. I don't know
this. They are required. This superintendent in this particular water district requires that all material, supplies, labor, for a contractor, for a developer, is to be purchased through the water district. Now, these people can go out. They can buy sand, for example, on the open market for $1.80 a yard, placed in the trench. Yet they must pay $5 a yard, $4.80 up to $5 a yard, to the district, buy it through the district, and the district will not allow them to buy from, but they must purchase through this district. They couldn't even use their own plumber, where they could get the work done much cheaper, but they must use a plumber that the district approves of. They can't buy anything on their own. They must, as far as the plumbing or anything to do with water in that district must be purchased through the district. And the prices are many times double, three times as high by going through the district that these people, the contractors, could buy on the open market. I strongly suspected Hanky Panky. I have appeared before the board, as well as others, and they listen to us, but no action is taken. We need some protection for these people. We need an agency that they can come to. And that was, so the reason we have this bill drafted, we felt that the Public Utilities Commissioner could take appropriate action. We see here an ORS 757, the accounts required. We could bring this to the attention of the Public Utilities Commissioner, and I think we could find some relief for these people that have a difficult time in this particular water district. The cost of this, of course, is passed on to the consumer, so the cost of the homes in that area would be higher. They have no other choice.
Following me is Mr. Smelter, Roger Smelter, who has some of the statistics and where they have even charged them more, and he asked for an accounting and found that the accounts were totally inaccurate. If you had paid them, they would have probably accepted it, and there would have never been a refund. But we've had nothing but trouble in this particular area, and this is the reason for this bill, and we would certainly appreciate it. This committee could take appropriate action and place these water districts. They have nothing to fear. If their books are, their auditing procedures are right, if they're honest, they have no fear and to be placed under the jurisdiction of the Public Utilities Commissioner. And I think it's for the protection of the public. There may be other such water districts in the state of Oregon that I'm unaware of.
How long has this been going on?
Oh, I'd say for probably 4 or 5 years. We had a bill in this last session. I think you were in the committee to try and correct this another way, but it seems to me that this is the only route that we can take. And I would hope, I don't know what the position of the Public Utilities Commissioner, but it would seem to me that the Public Utilities Commissioner should favor this type of legislation if he knows this is going on in the state of Oregon. Did he testify for it or opposed to it?
Chairman, my friend was the same thing he testified, but he did not want the job. And Kelly don't want the ball. And what's more, there's a bill 2207 or something. 2207, he said, even take what he has away.
Well, let me say this. If he doesn't want the job, perhaps we should take some of the other duties away from him and give it to another agency. You know,
well,
if he doesn't like the job, why?
That's not
his problem. Yeah. I would suggest that we take a long look at the PUC commissioner and see if we couldn't take some of his duties away from him. He's overburdened and has too much work and is not interested in correcting a situation such as this, which has to do with public utilities.
Let me ask
and
you.
And if we, yeah. I'll help get the bill through the rules if you want to sponsor it, Wally.
What the real chairman said the other day on the forum, Jim, I don't think anybody would be paying trouble with the bill for it. That's kind of a problem. What this bill does, this is exempt from any regulation of PUC, any water utility serving less than 200 customers at a rate of $10 per month. Do you know whether or not this particular one that's causing you the trouble would be some under that?
Yeah, I think I'm sure there's over 200 users here.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good vehicle for you to take other duties away from the public utilities.
Take the gas, take some
gas. Give the Department of Commerce, they'd love to have it.
Do you have questions? You're listening.
Not
somebody else you
want to? Yes, Mr. Smelter.
Are they signed? Are they signed
up? Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're
quite welcome. Can I pass around?
Chairman, I'm Roger Smelter. I represent Princess Homes Construction Company and also the State Home Builders Association. And I'd like to 4325 Southeast Roswell, Portland. I'd like to just simply read my testimony. Over a period of years, I've had numerous occasions to question the bookkeeping ability of the water districts in our state. To emphasize my point, I relate one specific case. In June 1969, we made a deposit of $2,418.46 to the Claremont Water District. This figure was based on an estimate made at our request by Claremont Water District and was the cost estimated by them to install water mains in our subdivision, South End Terrace. 7 months after the construction of the system, that was by the water district, we received notice from the water district that it had actually cost $4,112.80 to construct the system. We would have to pay the difference of $1,694.34, or 70% more than they had originally estimated. It took us 3 months longer to obtain copies of the invoices for this job, and when we did get them, we found evidence of many errors. We took these invoices to our DA and were informed by his office that it quite likely was a case of fraud, but that we as developers could never prove it in a court of law. The water district could always pass this off as poor bookkeeping. And that's the fact, that's exactly what he told me, that you don't stand a chance as a developer against the water district. And in closing, copies of these invoices for you to review, please notice that invoice number 7348 was altered not once, but twice. And you might take a look at that if you would. There's a little tab on it toward the end there. But this material was delivered to their stock file, and you see that's erased out at the top. They erased that and put it South End Terrace, which was my job. And then later when I questioned them, they agreed to change this, put it back in stock. Because that's where it went.
It
did, yes. Well, I suspect that they sold the material to someone else. The water district never investigated this to find out where that material went. It's gone. They weren't interested to find out where it went. I called the utility commissioner at that time. He says, well, we have, you know, there's nothing we can do. It's not under my jurisdiction. And that's why I feel that at this time it's necessary. These additional costs are passed on to the consumer. See, I'm in court. Okay. To my knowledge, the Claremont Water District Board of Commissioners, where I reported this matter, never investigated this incident and never found out where the extra materials went. In fact, they were quite upset with me for even bothering them. I feel that these materials may have been sold by a water district employee and the money went into his pocket. There is, at the present time, no public body available or interested enough to investigate this and many other similar cases that occur every day in water districts. It is my opinion that the Public Utility Commissioner should be authorized to audit water districts. This would require that a water district keep better records and should help to discourage possible fraud. I feel that the high cost of water in some districts is simply a result of misspent or misplaced funds by water districts. This cost is paid by home purchasers and water consumers in our state. Therefore, I urge you to vote for and pass Senate Bill 221. This is happening to us every day out here, and we have to pass it on to the people that buy homes from us. There are some. I only deal with Claremont and Redmond. This is happening in the Redmond Water District. It's happening in the Holcomb Water District, I know of. But I don't work with the other districts enough. The potential is there. It could occur. This particular superintendent several years ago was reprimanded for using water district employees while they were on the water district payroll for private business purposes. He was going out and contracting tractor work, and he was forced to sell his business. That's all it had been. But he's still working there. We bring these things up at the board meeting. Senator Groner has gone to these meetings with me, and they just don't care. They figure that they're paying him, and they're donating their time. They're not being paid. The district attorney doesn't seem to be concerned about it.
You would advise my attorney that, number one,
I'll probably
say
some
children, number one,
you
have no control over it, not under his authority.
I believe this is what he told me. I think he does an occasional audit. My opinion was that he had no control over the matter, that he could do nothing.
The second one, you went to the district attorney.
Yes. Right. It was Roger. It's Roger Ruff. It was a member of his staff, however, that advised me this. I think it was Richard Crist, I believe. Thank you. I do have one other testimony of another builder that will be passed around. I would also like to have Bob Effinger testify. He signed up.
Bob Effinger. Mr. Chairman, Chairman Smitty, Bob Effinger of the Tri-City Drywall. My feelings of this in this matter is basically the same as Mr. Smelter's. One situation that I can state figures on is that I have a subdivision in Oregon City, and I have a total of 1,180 feet of roadway, which would be the same in water lines. I received an estimated cost from the Carter and Bringle for the Claremont Water District, and their total cost figures out to be or $19,050.90 for an estimated cost. Now that on their Mr. Smelter's estimate or actual cost, average cost of putting in water lines came to between $6 and $6.25 a foot, but their estimated cost from the Claremont District is $16.14.50. Now this is something that I'm supposed to put on deposit in advance with no interest, and then they get their bid from their own selected contractors. I can't use any contractor; it has to be approved through them. Then when the actual cost comes in, then I'm reimbursed for this money, but it still lays there from the time during construction at no interest. So that's there's $11,823 laying there, never to be used, with no interest, plus a $6,000 deposit for meters and lot improvements. So this this money that lays there that's never used, I don't know if they receive an interest off it or if anybody does, but it's a cost to me as a developer, which I have to pass on to someone, which is the consumer. And there have been other instances in the area that that make you wonder if someone shouldn't be watching what's going on, you know. And apparently there isn't. So that's just why I'm in favor of this bill, because if this would get them to someone to control what's going on, control their books or something, I think it is a lot of unnecessary expense passed on there, either through mismanagement of the district or the books or whatever.
Do they charge any kind of inspection fee?
Well, they have a 15%, and I assume this is part of their inspection fee, 15% of the total cost. But this 15% is the total cost of the whole thing. I mean, if I think I have an estimated $2,484 for overhead and inspection.
You have to hire people they recommend.
Right.
Buyers to verify sources. Mm-hmm. And then they charge an inspection fee
on top. Right. And you have no control over these over the men who the companies that bid this. It's their own bid. If you can go out and get a bid from a legitimate business man that's in this type of work, and you can beat their bid by quite a bit, it's immaterial. They won't accept it. Full amount of their estimated cost, their overhead expense, and plus they want a deposit of $100 a lot, what they call system improvements, and $100 for each water meter, which is a total of $6,000. That's 30 lots. Now this comes back off your water meter charge later on, but it still lays there interest free.
Association, Tri-County Association of Water Districts, which has about 40 or so members in the Tri-County metropolitan area of Portland, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County. I didn't hear the testimony of Senator Groner except in his parting words, but I heard the testimony of the other witnesses which followed him. Now, we're always welcome an opportunity to have a bill of this kind presented to this body, not because it has any particular merit, and this one does not, but really it gives us an opportunity to explain every biennium or so what makes the water district tick and why, after having served the people for about 50 years, why they're still successful and still operate. Now, I didn't hear all the testimony on the subject of why a water district should be put under PUC. It will suffice to say, however, that the Public Utility Commissioner Act exempts municipal corporations from the operation of the of its office. A water district is a municipal corporation owned by the people, organized under Chapter 247, I think, of 147 of the code. It is a closely regulated corporation. Two sessions ago, we had a uniform act which covered a number of special districts, and any errors or areas where we felt that there was a deficiency in making a special district, including a water district, responsive to the needs of the people, those gaps were plugged in and filled up, and we feel now that we have essentially a very fine law. Well, they're regulated by the legislature through a number of statutes. Now, see, the Public Utility Commissioner, Senator, regulates privately owned utilities, without which there would be no regulation. There's no direct regulation on them practiced by this legislature except through a Public Utility Act. Here, there are a number of controls, which I will enumerate. These include, in the first place, a procedure by which the commissioners are elected. They're run by a board of commissioners, the citizens of the district, elected for a four-year term on a staggered basis, so one, in some cases, two are elected each year. They are subject to recall.
Would you rather just lay out and ask questions or something?
Oh, anything you want to do. I'd rather be responsive to your questions, really.
I was wondering about that. I was going to ask Mr. Kelly this time if they're elected and whether they tried to do anything about re-electing new board members. Then it dawned on me that it should be the advantage of the old members of the district to socket to the new members of the district as it comes in. So if the facts are, as Mr. Kelly believes them to be, trying to convince the old people that the new people coming in should be considered to vote would not be a very fruitful adventure, even though they are elected.
Well, yeah, I think that's a valid observation, but the question of financing the extension of the facilities of the water district is going to cost money. And it's the job of the Board of Commissioners to determine how that is to be best discharged by the district itself, by the people in the district. Normally, the type of situation which is testified to, where the people who ask for main extensions pay for the cost of that main, they prevail. And under a system which is generally outlined, namely that for those who wish to develop property and bring the water system to their property that they're going to sell, most districts require, and most districts have embarked upon what they call a user paying program, which calls for the users to pay the whole cost of that facility which will serve only those users. And the procedure is roughly as outlined, that the when a developer comes into a water district area, an area served by a water district, and asks that the facilities be brought up to his development, the district will do that, and it will ask for a deposit equal to what, in the opinion of their engineer, is the cost of that development. Because there's no other way except for litigation to obtain that money. The only other alternative.
Don't you have a valve when the maintenance is turned off so they don't get any water?
Yes, but we are prohibited by law from turning off a valve to enforce the payment of money. Now remember, that's. Mm-hmm. Have your question answered, Senator?
Well, in other words.
I'd like to develop that one before we go into Senator Meeker's
question. All right, so what you're saying is that you have no authority to collect the money before you turn the water off.
Well, no, I'm saying this, that
the valve I'm talking about, the valve you turn on the subdivision, you're saying that the water district cannot say to them, we don't have your $6,000, we're not going to throw the valve. You're saying the minute the thing is in, whether they're paid or not, the water control district has to supply the water?
Right, if there are users in there. See, the ultimate, the relationship between the, which is controlled by the statute and by the Supreme Court, is that between the Board of Commissioners of the Water District, the public corporation, and the ultimate user of the water, the guy that turns on the tap. This isn't a developer. He's gone. We have to turn on that tap to the water user if that water user pays the bill for his water. Period.
he hasn't received any water, he hasn't paid any bills. In other words, I'm talking about the initial. I understand the telephone and the water and the lights and that sort of thing. They get down the line and you have heavy restrictions, I understand that. But what I'm worried about is the initial development, and I agree 100% with you, the user ought to pay for it. The question is the user paying for more than he's getting? And I think that's what I'm...
Well, that, I think, is one of the questions that's raised. Is he being paid more for his getting? Now, these figures, for example, 10 or 15% over the actual cost, those are not inspection fees. That is engineering fees. Remember now, these facilities are laid in the ground, not just helter-skelter by a bunch of well-meaning dipsticks. This is a considered thing. The whole plan of a water system is a engineered facility. And the type of facility needed, the size, and where the water is going to come from within the framework of the district are engineering considerations for which a wise operator is going to require the services of an engineer. The actual cost, which is so much money for pipes, valves, fittings, and so forth, is paid by the developer, plus anywhere from 10 to 15% in addition, which is the cost that the district has to pay for the engineering. These are non-profit organizations. They do not make money. Yeah.
Are you familiar with this particular district and the problem that
we're dealing with? Well, I don't know Claremont District. I know of it. I think they were here last session. And I think this is essentially their complaint.
You say it's regulated by the legislature, so what
recourse? Well, yes, I would say that they...
What recourse those gentlemen have in the Oregon law today on this problem?
Well, number one that I heard, I heard the testimony, I haven't read it, and maybe I haven't studied it, but I heard some things that I know are wrong. They said there should be an audit, and that somebody should perform an audit, and there is no audit. That's not right. There is an audit that's required and it's filed every year with the Secretary of State. And it's not just recently, but for a number of years. These districts, all of them, as a requirement imposed by the state law, prepare and file an audit. Now, in Multnomah County, of course, you have a tax supervising conservation commission that sits on top of this thing, and maybe the answer is if you have it spread the authority of the tax supervising commission to Clackamas and other counties.
What's the recourse if the audit is incorrect?
Well, then it's, somebody has to do something. Now,
I'm trying to zero in on who
we go to. Well, let's say you go to the district attorney. We have a law saying the district attorney should prosecute for the crime. And he isn't going to prosecute. That was a part of the testimony here. Then your question is, what do you fellows as senators do about that?
Right.
I don't know what you do about that. I don't know.
Well, it's very difficult for me because part of your discussion is my district. It's very difficult for me to ignore. Because I'm not representing people in that district. Yes, they ignore the situation.
Well, well, let's see what others. Yes, I would say that there's an answer. I mean, the normal type thing. We feel that the water district of all forms of local government is perhaps more local than any other form. It is the one where there's a direct rapport between the people being served and those who serve them, the commissioners and the users. Now, yes. And
may I interrupt you? I think that this could be drawn on quite a while. We have Senator 185, the people here from Klamath Falls. So, and you'll be available, don't you?
Yeah, I can be available.
And you can step this over for another time.
Thank you. I don't invite any questions that you fellows might have.
Okay, well, it's Senate Bill 185 now. This is regarding parking facilities. It's a bill that... Senate Bill 484, which was introduced last session, was passed the Senate almost unanimously, and ended up in a committee, as I recall, in the House, and didn't pass. That was last session. Somebody named Miller from Klamath Falls. Am I like him or Hill?
No.
Okay. You want to look that
up? Mr. Chairman, you want to get signed up? Do we have to testify in the order to be signed up?
I want to take all the Klamath Falls people, and I don't care what order to testify.
Chairman? Ted Lindley is my name, in Klamath Falls. I'm representing the downtown property owners from Klamath Falls in opposition to changing this bill. And the reason that we oppose it is because the thing they want to take out of the bill is the only thing that is protecting the property owner in a parking district. In other words, the reason it relates to Klamath Falls so much is because, and it's going to relate to other towns in the state undoubtedly, is because the park and shop area down there, they have five parking lots, is in financial trouble, and it was testified 2 years ago that they are, they're losing money. So they're trying to sell their lots to the city to make municipal free municipal parking. And up to here, this is okay. I don't think that there's anybody in opposition to that, providing the whole city would pay for it through the taxation, raising everybody's taxes in the city. But the city council has arbitrarily drawn out a parking district, a small area. It's only 8 blocks long and approximately 4 blocks wide. And they said that everybody in this district will have a lien on their property, and it's quite substantial lien on the property, to buy these parking shops and then turn them over to the city. Well, now, there are many of us in the downtown area who have our own parking, paid money for it, and had the black topping and the stripping and this on it, many of them are down there. And they want us then now to buy the parking shop and turn it over to the city for municipal parking, which in turn is just buying parking for our opposition in a way. Now, if the parking shop would like to sell their property, that's fine. They could sell them to these individual stores and so forth and let them buy it and make their own parking. But to sell it to the city and then have this parking district pay for this, it's an inequity. In the first place, the liens were put on the property as of the square footage that we have. Consequently, a place that has a large parking lot, let's say, and a small building is going to pay a tremendous amount of money, whereas a building that, like the medical dental building, 6 stories high and doesn't take very much property, then they don't pay too much. In other words, the inequities are tremendous. Now, the idea is that you pass that on to the businessman through your leases. In other words, if you have a piece of property and you're leasing it, then you can pass that on. But many of these leases run for up to 10 years, and you can't do anything about that. And then many of the lessees of this property have made the statement that they will move if they have to pay for this. In other words, they're going to look for new locations.
Who owns the parking lot now?
It's a corporation of people down there.
Private individuals. Bought some property and worked out a parking lot where they like
Yeah, exactly.
They want now to sell that to the city of Klamath Falls,
right,
have the municipality acquire those and pay for it by accepting the businesses in the service.
Right, against the property owners in that district that they drew out.
They drew that district out themselves.
Yes, the city council drew the district out. And I understand that that's a perfectly legal thing. They can draw a district and they call it parking district number one. Well, this they can then, when this is set to precedent, then they can say, all right, now over here is parking district number two, we'll take that property for it. I think the city council has set it up, but we opposed it 2 years ago, and we won in the court because of this statement that is trying to be taken out of here now. The statement is, however, a city may not so acquire privately owned property used for public parking unless the facility to be constructed by the city would substantially increase the number of vehicle off-street parking spaces available for public use. Exactly. Now this takes it off the tax rolls, you see, which is going to raise the taxes. It also probably forever says that say a motel wanted to move in and buy this lot and put in other words, it takes it completely off. Now, as far as buying an old ramshackle building and tearing it down and making off-street parking, that's fine because they're substantially increasing the parking.
What's the name of the corporation that owns the parking lot?
I think it's just Park and Shop Corporation. Noel Flynn was an officer in it. He was head of Palex down there. I don't know, no. I don't, really. I can't say any of the officers. But the only protection... now, for instance, there's a young fellow, he just couldn't happen to be here this time. He has a funeral home. His father left a funeral home. Now, he has parking spaces. It's within this district that they drew out, by the way. All right? He probably has 40 to 50... Well, let's say 40 parking lots of spaces. It's very beautiful. He takes care of the snow removal and has flowers and all this and that. All right? Whenever there's no service, he's been very generous, turns the thing around, says, no service today, free parking. He gives this parking to the city when they don't have a service. Now, his assessment is over $12,000, you see, to buy these parking shops when he has his own parking. And there's another funeral home that doesn't have any parking, just a few, two or three blocks away, that doesn't have any assessment because they didn't happen to be drawn out into the parking district. You see what I mean? So, in other words, the man who has the parking, for instance, in my business, I have 23 parking spaces. I'm an optometrist, and I have my own building, and I purposely bought a large enough lot for expansion maybe to another part, maybe another clinic on there, which would put money on the tax rolls. So I have 23 parking places, and I need practically, you'll say, 7 or 8. So I rent these parking spaces out to help pay the taxes. All right? If this bill, if they were able to make me pay, for instance, to buy the parking shop, then I couldn't rent my spaces out. They would be able to be free parking for the city at any time. The thing is, I don't think that any of us are against municipal parking. I mean, but nothing free, you know, and we have to buy it. Just a few people. If they would, if they'd pass it around in the whole city, then I don't think anybody would really care. But they can't get these parking shop lots the way the law is written now because they're not substantially increasing the parking unless they go up or down. Yes, they do. Yeah, they have one lot that I know of. They might have two. And they had bought this lot and developed it, I think, through parking meter money. I don't know where the money came from, but there was no bond issue or anything to do this. But they do have some free parking. If they would take old buildings and tear them down and make free parking out of it, that's perfectly all right. But to just shift this that's already parking, number one, Klamath Falls doesn't need any more parking at all. You know, we've got plenty of parking, lots of it, providing these parking shops are operating. And if the parking shops get so desperate that they have to sell, then what we would say is that let them sell to private individuals and let them develop their own parking, just like we have done. And there are many of us in this parking district that have our own parking, markets and buildings and so forth that have underground parking or something.
Okay, I don't
like
this. Give
us your address. I wrote it, 1428 Pacific Terrace in Klamath Falls.
Okay.
Yes.
To this,
right.
I think I have to take that.
See, if this thing is deleted out of here, then they can just arbitrarily condemn our property and take anything they want, you know. Okay. Thank you.
We have a member that came in, Mr. Ryan. I'd like to have him registered.
575. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Miller, Klamath Falls. I've been a resident there since 1931. We've been in business my father started the business in 1936. We've been on the same location on Klamath Avenue, which is one block from the downtown center, since 1941. We're vitally interested in this issue. Being one of the property owners that's going to be burdened with a heavy assessment if this thing is consummated. There is a district question as to its validity right at this point, which was formed by the city council. It came under direct attack 2 years ago before a similar committee, which you referred to. This has some real meaning to us. We have some distress, more or less, for being here. This assessment is considerable for some of us, particularly those, as Mr. Lindley pointed out, that have a lot of ground area for parking. I'm one of those that has provided parking for as long as we've been in business. We had to, and always have, along with some others. The bonding proposal is in excess of $500,000. Now, this will all transpire if the district is consummated. The bonds will be issued. They'll be sold in one package. They won't dribble them out. So we're automatically going to have a heavy assessment. Now, how fast the development progresses, we don't know. But you're going to have a bond issue in excess of $500,000. And this is stated in their preliminaries, in their final surveys and so forth, which they published here in 1970. That's on cost 2 years ago. It's going to be in excess of that. It just has to. And they admit it at recent hearings, studies that they made, that there is going to be a tremendous override on this thing just because of inflationary factors. So this is the reason I'm here, because my assessment, and I have here with me a number of letters for people that are in a similar position. Some of them don't have an income, but even with a business, it's, and like Mr. Lindley, a professional man, this isn't something that we're going to just brush off. So I have a selfish motive for being here. Make no apologies for it. On the other hand, the statute is under direct attack, and I mean direct attack, by the people that are interested in seeing this district consummated for itself and property. This was good legislation 2 years ago when it was under attack. I don't know how long it's been on the books. Well, it's been when it was under attack.
The
existing legislation is good, is what I meant to say. It came under attack 2 years ago. It's under attack again. It's under attack by the same proponents that Mr. Lindy mentioned, that want to sell some property to the city, parking district. 2 years ago, we did. That was in opposition. I think the legislation is good legislation because any district, any taxing authority, and this is a new taxing authority sitting right in the middle of two other taxing authorities, the county and the city. So we got three of them. We will have three of them. The taxing authority in excess of $500,000 plus. Now, what's the limitation? As they presently exist, there is a fixed limitation as to what a parking district in our city or any other city in Oregon can do about acquiring property. They got to have a specific use for it. And they can't be, it's very specific as to this use this property to be put to for the benefit of the public, and it must increase parking. I think it's wise legislation. I think it should stay on the book, particularly when it's under attack by somebody that has a selfish motive to sell some property. Sure, I have a selfish motive too, but I'm looking at a big assessment. Our district, which is lined out of the downtown core area, small district, and they propose to even make it smaller. Under, we don't know what kind of a plan we got coming up for sure. There's one of eight plans. Since they run into some opposition.
I don't even know that.
Pardon?
Where does this district run in downtown Family Falls in relationship to where it goes?
My store, there's. I'm. What do you mean? Your question. I'm in the district.
Is it go right down the main street?
It goes right down Main Street in one block
on either side.
On either side. That's the general description of it.
Down as far as the
A little. It goes to 3rd Street. That's the
part.
To 11th Street,
oak or walnut that you pass time family. It goes down to another block. Then it goes up past Pine Tree. Are you familiar with that tree? It's on the other side of Maine. But instead of going right from Pine and Pine and another, they put it right down between Pine and High. They didn't go clear to High Street. They just threw it out arbitrarily.
It's about 8 blocks by 3 blocks.
8 by 3, I'm afraid. Maybe 3.5.
The Klamath City Council, apparently in the face of the opposition from all of the downtown merchants that are going to be saddled with this, nevertheless, has gone ahead, right? It's the law passed. They're going to fly in the face of your objections. Is that correct?
I don't understand what your question is.
Well,
it's kind of a leading question, so.
If we pass this law, that is, if we pass this bill, which repeals the law and would enable these people to condemn these parts of God, then the city council would have to act affirmatively to go forward and condemn the property and proceed, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, they're going to do this in spite of the opposition of all of these downtown property owners that are going to be affected. Is that right?
Yes. If this is taken out of law. That's our protection. This is
the only protection that we have.
Well, why?
Because it's a unique case. This is probably a classical case in testing this statute. I don't know, not all, but whether this issue has ever come up with any other city in Oregon.
Well, I can't see how, if this is as oppressive as it seems to be, and it has such unified opposition from the downtown business, I don't see how the city council can fly in the face.
That's a good question. We don't even. We don't understand it either. We tried to get, this is all history, but this thing was, I knew about it, that the reform of the parking district, when I got a book like this, printout from the city, telling me how much my assessment was and everybody else. And this was on their agenda, their working session.
We were. That's why they are doing this. A little history on it.
Yeah,
all right. You see, there are some of the merchants that don't own property. They're renting, who would like to see the parking shop areas become municipal free parking, particularly if these lots are next to their business, because they have to buy these stickers that they're putting on for $2 purchase, you know, parking shop. Right now, if they're bought for free parking, that eliminates them from having to buy these stickers, and they still have free parking for people right at their doorstep and at our expense. This is what
I've been working for. What was that $500,000 going to be used for?
To sell this parking.
Just that one?
Well, a number of lots, most of which, yes,
are the
parking shop lots. Now, it's been publicly admitted, and I think Mr. Lindy pointed out to you here, that some of the officers, and they have admitted to me personally, a couple of them, I've known them for years, that if the city doesn't buy these properties that they have, and it's been a miserable failure. They admit it. They don't know what they're going to do. In fact, they're bankrupt. Now, we leased a building from parking shop, our company, my brother and I. It's an adjoining building to where we're in, and we leased it because we needed it. It came up to lease. So I know some of these people. They, in their proposal, in their map, which 2 years ago, when they were forming the parking shop district and had one public hearing that I was attended, and I think that was probably the only one, I'm reasonably sure that they did. That was just one public hearing in the city council. They had a map on the wall there outlining this district and the proposed lot colored in. All of the parking shop lots were in that area that were then purchased.
How many more are beyond the parking shop?
I think now we have a representative here that from DFW, he's going to speak. They were going to acquire his building in condemnation. There's a couple other lots. I have some letters which I want to submit here.
Okay,
and I just like to briefly point out who they are. So that, this is Klamath Production Credit Association within the proposed district in opposition. They were in opposition 2 years ago. This is the Farmers Credit Association. They have over 800 accounts. They want to be sure and that serve, they serve over 800 farmer accounts in the farm area, Lakeview, Altruist, and Klamath Basin. Here's a letter from Mr. Bruce Niles, insurance adjuster, owns 4 pieces of property. He objected to it 2 years ago. He does again. Here's a letter from Donald A. Germiner, who objected to it 2 years ago, and he strongly opposes it again. Here's a letter from Walter D. Stevens Hotel, who was on the opposition very strenuously 2 years ago. Here's a letter in the same tone today. Here's a Klamath Lodge, Independent Order of Odd Fellows, signed by Mr. Munsell, and he discussed this with, he mentions in here, his representative, head man, Portland. They opposed the bill very strenuously. CPI, Concrete Product Industries, signed by Douglas Stiles, the general manager, strong opposition to it. This is the, notwithstanding the fact that they're in the city, they should probably profit a little bit by this. They are property owners, downtown Main Street. Salvation Army, signed by the captain. They oppose it. Now, you have received other letters in opposition.
Was there a hearing in the state federal 2 years ago? Was there a hearing in the state federal and did any of you or any people appear in the state 2 years ago?
I didn't. I understand Mr. Lindsay did.
We were never notified that it had already passed the Senate. By the time it got to the House committee, then we found out about it. And so we came up and told our story and made that in committee.
But I think I probably voted for it 2 years ago. And I don't remember the details.
It was being put through by a member of the
Let me ask another question. Do you know any of the officers of Parker Johnson Corporation other than Mr. Jones?
I got my idea.
You got it, okay.
I submit to this committee that this has been good legislation that has passed, I don't know how long ago. Now, this very question here wouldn't ever come up unless it came under direct attack, which it is, by this group. And to lift this out of the statute just leaves property owners vulnerable. And I think it should be stay on the book.
Okay.
I hope that it doesn't get out of this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Somebody else from Klamath Falls here. Come on up. Give us your name, age, rank, and serial number, and where you live.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, I'm Robert Ross, commander of Pelican Post 1383, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Klamath Falls. I don't, I'm not too well versed on all this, but Mr. Miller and Dr. Lindley have already covered. The only one reason that I'm here is that we have been under attack. We've had to go to court once over this to preserve our post home. And we're back in it again. We have 690 members in our post, and I'm speaking on behalf of them, that we're all strongly opposed to this. Most of mine is personal. That we just we're going to put an awful hardship on things around there. They get the crane after us.
Had a post taken a position against
yes.
the bill, and you're out here testifying
yes.
on behalf of the post in opposition to this post.
This is right.
Fine. Are there questions?
No.
Okay, and if not, thank you. And if you want to present additional testimony later, we'll be happy to hear it. Louise Cannon. I want to let you know that we're going to go for 6 more minutes and then we're going to adjourn this meeting. And if there's anybody in favor of Senate Bill 185, that's obviously going to turn out. But we won't see any action in the case of the day.
I'll give you my name, but not my age, right?
Well, you know, since
we
passed
these rights, you know, well, okay. I'm Louise Hannon, and I own 2 parcels of the core area property in Klamath County.
You live here in Salem?
I live here in Salem. I wrote to each of you this week expressing my opposition to Senate Bill 185, and I would like to take this opportunity to read it into the record. I called your attention to the fact that this Bill 185 is Harry Blavin's Senate Bill 484 that he fought to the death for at the last session. Senator Jensen, thank you, Jim. You were a co-sponsor of that bill at that time, and that presents something of a problem, but well, maybe it does to us. I am not sure.
Well, Senator Madden, I think it's
probably most appropriate to be personality down
here. I am not, sir. I just wanted to see if we were still in favor of the bill. Now, I want to express my opposition to Senate Bill 185. This is an absolutely irresponsible piece of legislation. Realize the enormity of this, that a city may acquire private property or use as public parking facilities, even though the facilities to be constructed would not substantially increase public off-street parking. And you know what this means? It means, for instance, the city of Klamath Falls can, quote, purchase downtown property at an approximate cost of $500,000. The newspaper says the exact figure has not been made public. Well, I checked newspaper figures again last night, and they have been raised to between $632,000, even up to $900,000. And there's no limit. This purchase price, whatever it may be, is to be assessed to the core area property owner. My assessment alone will be over $9,000. That's with the $500,000 figure. Are you aware that this Senate Bill 185 is Harry Boyden's Senate Bill 484 that he tried to get through the last session for personal reasons? Unfortunately for the people, when the matter was caught and brought before the Urban Affairs Committee, they realized what an irresponsible piece of legislation they were placing in the hands of city government, legislation that could mean the ruination of property owners. Such legislation in the hands of an irresponsible city government can spell disaster. I am attaching a copy of an editorial from the Klamath News and Herald, dated February 8, 1973, which I am sure will prove an eye-opener to you. We, the people, the taxpayers, must be able to trust you, our lawmakers, our elected officials, to protect our interests. You are our advocates. We look to you for justice, and we ask that you do not pass Senate Bill 185. Now, I'd like to read the editorial to you. Council Secret Session affronts the Klamath Falls citizens. The Klamath Falls City Council was irresponsible in holding a secret, quote, study session, unquote, January 22nd, when it discussed at length seven proposed plans for the implementation of downtown parking district number one. The cloak and dagger method of arranging the meeting is totally ludicrous in our system of representative government, and it is totally unacceptable. We can appreciate the concern of the mayor and councilman and Jepson to come to terms with a problem that is at best complex. But the method they chose was an insult to the citizens who elected them and who pay the city's bills. They could have held a publicly announced executive session to discuss it. At least the public would have been aware that a meeting was held, and the people of Klamath Falls would not have to wonder why their elected officials must sneak around, not even informing an absent council member of the meeting, and being careful not to mention their actions openly. We are now faced with the possibility that a parking district should be implemented without further public hearing. Also, we do not know why this particular plan is the most acceptable to the council, because we do not know what the other seven plans were that the council rejected. The actions of the mayor and council, and their taking along staff people, raises many serious questions that need not have been. The council has met once in secret. How many other times? The council talked about the parking district. What other topics may have been discussed? Why does the council feel it cannot trust the penitentiary eye of public inspection? These are questions which would not have been raised if the council had recognized its responsibility to be open to the people of Klamath Falls. We do not doubt for a moment that the men who sit in seats of mayor and council are honest men serving with the best interest of the community in mind. But their secrecy in conducting themselves in public matters can destroy their effectiveness. We hope the councilmen have been embarrassed by the incident. They should be. We also hope something constructive came of it, that the council learned to transact the public business in public, not just to be more careful the next time we want to hold a secret meeting. Now, I'd like to point out that there are city governments like that of Salem who proceed cautiously in the matter of obtaining parking lots. Parking meter money was set aside and allocated for parking. A site was purchased several years ago on State Street when they went to parallel parking. A couple years later, when it was felt more parking was needed, the city leased a lot across from Penny's, just the 6 spaces, leased for 6 months at a time. The traffic manager pointed out to me yesterday that the lot is rarely ever filled, only at Christmas time. Many California cities are leasing parking lots as needed, and only as needed, and only for as long as needed. And the tax burden core area property owner is not buried beneath another financial burden. And then there are the city governments like Klamath Falls who ride roughshod over the property owner victim, intending to condemn, purchase, and develop a number of properties at one time for parking lots. Quote, giant city parking district, unquote, is slated. Now, Grant staff has such a situation. I would like to read the results to you. And this is from the Salem Capital Journal.
Well, if you have, you're going to read something from the newspaper, just give us a copy of it, or we'll make a photocopy.
Well, it's just a very, very short article on the lot being auctioned off.
We'll just make a copy of it and give it to the members if can. We have to assess in 12 minutes and we'll make them, then maybe somebody else will have to
try to call. If someone would like to, I'd like to keep the copy. As I said, these lots that the city illegally bought, 7 of them, were auctioned off, and they didn't get back even, they didn't get back even 30 cents on the dollar. Now you have the power and the duty to protect us from tragedies like this by seeing to it that legislation with no protection, such as Senate Bill 185, is not allowed to become a law. No just lawmaker can, in good conscience, sacrifice any city, any group of property owners to be crushed for the terrible financial burden such an assessment risk would create.
Okay, thank you. Questions? If not, thank you.
We'll
some of else in the Klamath Falls
would like to make a brief statement.
Hi,
Lister. Madam, I'm Maurice Sutton, property owner in Klamath Falls. I'd just like to go on record as opposing this change in this bill. I'm one of the ones being assessed pretty heavy to provide these unneeded facilities.
Give us your address and record.
1435 California Avenue. I'm a property owner in this proposed district. I've been a resident of Klamath Falls for 25 years. I've been a merchant owner near Main Street for 25 years. And I'm pretty much aware of the need of parking in Klamath Falls, which is built right now. We have plenty of parking. In fact, I wish we didn't have parking. And I ask you to consider the opposition you've heard here today, the opposition to this change, and bear in mind that this kind of power to the city makes it less popular to own property in the city. We don't have enough property owners down there now to help us out with the emergency.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
If no one else in Klamath Falls, I'll conclude the hearing with some other questions, but we'll have to take them up at another time.
There's one minute.
Well, this better.